A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been on a Japanese television kick lately, and he sent over a question that's been rattling around since we last talked about absurd reality formats. He wants to know what actually unites Japanese reality TV, game shows, and wrestling in their willingness to push past whatever the West considers the edge. Is it just a cultural commitment to excellence applied to entertainment? And for someone just discovering this stuff, what recent shows with English subtitles will make you stop and ask what you're watching? Disturbing, hilarious, or just plain weird all count. But he pointed out that other Japanese formats have crossed over too, including the disturbing world of deathmatch wrestling. His question is, what unites the Japanese variants across all these categories? His theory is that it might be an expression of the Japanese commitment to excellence in whatever field they attempt. Some of it's disturbing, some of it's hilarious, some of it's just plain weird. Which is exactly what the West won't do. Our version of pushing the envelope is adding more prize money, or a twist nobody asked for. He wants us to focus on newer shows from the past few years, though he's fine with exceptions for anything truly spectacularly odd that's older.
The thing about Daniel's framing is that he's already named the mechanism without quite landing on it. It's not just commitment to excellence, it's commitment to premise. And I want to flag something early. There's a difference between shows that are weird because the premise is bizarre, and shows that are weird because the structure demands genuine suffering.
So what exactly unites a show where comedians can't laugh, and a wrestling match where the ring explodes?
Total sincerity. That's the whole thing. Western shows wink at the audience constantly. There's always a host raising an eyebrow, a confessional where someone says, "Can you believe we're doing this? Japanese formats don't do that." The purest example is documental. Hitoshi Matsumoto created it in 2016 for Amazon Prime Japan, and it's been running for multiple seasons since. The premise is so simple it sounds like nothing. 10 comedians sit in a room.
It becomes a sport.
It becomes a sport, or a ritual, or an endurance test, and that's what makes it transcendent instead of just weird. Weird for weirdness' sake is what happens when you don't commit. Japanese weird TV is ruthlessly structured. That's it. No prize money, no audience vote, no immunity idols, just 10 professionals whose entire identity is built on being funny, trying to break each other while not breaking themselves.
So, it's a comedy show where the comedy is the weapon.
And the format punishes the one thing comedians can't control. You can't fake not laughing. It's involuntary. So you're watching these people who have spent decades learning to weaponize humor, now desperately trying to suppress their own reflex. Some of them resort to biting the inside of their cheeks, staring at the ceiling, pinching themselves. One guy apparently tried to think about his grandmother's funeral.
Wait, did that work? Thinking about the grandmother's funeral?
According to the interview he gave afterward, it worked for about 45 seconds, and then someone across the room did something so absurd that the funeral image shattered and he was out. That's the thing about the format.
Documental.
Documental. Created by Matsumoto Hitoshi, half of the comedy duo Downtown. He's one of the most respected comedians in Japan, which matters because it means the show has real credibility within the industry. That's the mechanism. Early on, it's standard comedy bits. By hour three, someone's stripped naked and someone else is doing something with a piece of fruit that I won't describe on air.
Which is about $67,000.
About that, yes. And here's the part that makes it work. These are professionals. They know every comedy technique in the book, and the humiliation would be softened with a redemption arc. Documental doesn't care about redemption. It cares about the art of comedy under pressure. The editing is precise, the pacing is deliberate, and Matsumoto treats it like a serious craft.
It's the opposite of a comedy show.
It's a comedy show where the audience is the enemy. Normally a comedian performs, and the audience's job is to laugh. Here the audience's job is to resist. And the performers know exactly which buttons to push because they know each other. They've worked together for years. They know each other's insecurities, their weak spots, the things that make them crack.
So it becomes psychological warfare.
They're all in, because the format demands it and because their professional identity is at stake. And the look on his face when he realizes he's out, after hours of holding on, is devastating.
It's a public statement about your ability to control yourself under pressure, in front of your peers.
That's the part Western audiences might miss. The room is full of people who know each other professionally. They've worked together, competed for the same slots, built reputations over decades. When you laugh, you're not just eliminated. You're showing everyone in your industry that your composure has a limit. That's a career-level stakes thing, and it's why some of them look terrified.
Let's move to game shows, because Takeshi's Castle is the entry point for most Western viewers, and it got a revival on Amazon Prime in 2023.
The revival is great for understanding what changed and what didn't. The original ran from 1986 to 1990, and it was mass physical comedy.
And Amazon adapted it for the West.
Last one laughing. The franchise has run in the UK, Australia, Canada, multiple other countries. The New York Times covered it when it expanded. And every single adaptation softens the format. Shorter durations, less cruelty, more editing. Watching a confident American contestant get absolutely destroyed by a giant foam boulder is a specific kind of joy. But here's the thing about Takeshi's Castle that people miss. The show doesn't edit for winners. It edits for maximum comic failure.
The redemption arc thing is interesting. Western TV needs the audience to feel okay about what they just watched.
Japanese TV doesn't ask for that. The format is the format. If the format requires a man to sit naked in a room for 15 months, then that's what happens.
That's Denpa Shonen. Nasubi.
1998. A comedian named Tomoaki Hamatsu, stage name Nasubi, was left naked in an apartment with no food, no clothes, no contact with the outside world. His only way to survive was to win prizes from magazine sweepstakes. He had to fill out contest entries, and whatever he won, he lived on. The segment ran for 15 months. It was broadcast weekly to millions of people.
And he didn't know it was being broadcast.
He did not. He thought he was filming a segment that might air later. He had no idea he was the most famous person in Japan. The producers kept him in that room while the show became a national phenomenon. When he finally got out, he had no idea what had happened.
That's the ancestor of this whole tradition. The DNA is there.
And it's the disturbing edge Daniel mentioned. This isn't all fun and games. Some of it's grim. But the same commitment that makes Documental transcendent made Nasubi exist. The producers followed the premise to its conclusion.
So let's talk about the physical counterpart. Deathmatch Wrestling.
Frontier Martial Arts Wrestling, FMW, pioneered this in the early 90s. Atsushi Onita was the driving force. Barbed wire ropes, exploding rings, light tubes, Big Japan Pro Wrestling, BJW, continues the tradition today. And here's where the cultural difference really shows. Western deathmatch wrestling, the CZW stuff, treats violence as spectacle. It's nihilism. It's shock for shock's sake. Japanese deathmatch treats it as sport.
What's the actual difference in the ring?
The respect rituals. After a Japanese deathmatch, the competitors bow to each other. They acknowledge what they just went through together. The framing is athletic. These are two men testing themselves against each other and against the environment. The violence is real, but the meaning is different. It's not about degradation, it's about endurance and courage.
The same shokunin spirit applied to light tubes and razor wire.
The craftsman's commitment. Once you've decided to do a death match, you do it properly. You don't half do it. You don't wink at the camera and say, "Isn't this crazy?" You commit to the match as if it were the most important athletic contest of your life.
There was a Big Japan exploding ring deathmatch in 2005 that people still talk about.
The moment the format became art, some people say. The ring was wired with explosives. The match built to this crescendo where both men were in the ring when it went off. And the aftermath, the respect shown between the two competitors, is what elevated it. It wasn't just violence. It was a shared ordeal.
So if Documental is the purest example of the comedy version, Deathmatch Wrestling is the physical version, and Takeshi's Castle is the game show version.
Takeshi's Castle ran from 1986 to 1990. Up to 140 contestants storming a castle defended by Takeshi Kitano and his forces. The obstacles were designed to be nearly impossible. The humor came from watching people try anyway, with full commitment.
What's a game when winning is impossible?
That's the question Takeshi's Castle asked, and the answer is that it becomes something else, a test of character, a spectacle of human determination, a comedy about the gap between effort and outcome.
So let's test Daniel's thesis. Is this Shokunin spirit or something darker?
I think it's both. The commitment is real. Japanese producers don't have to do anything, including absurdity. But there's also something about the Japanese entertainment industry specifically. The variety show tradition, the owari comedy scene, the dohaiyo of professional wrestling. These are all spaces where extreme dedication is expected as a baseline.
The disturbing edge is part of the package. Nasubi wasn't an accident. The producers knew what they were doing.
And the audience knew too. 15 million people watched Nasubi every week. The show was a hit. That's the part that makes Western observers uncomfortable. It's not that the producers were evil. It's that the entire society looked at this and said, yes, this is entertainment.
I think Western TV pulls its punches because it's afraid of that discomfort. It wants to be edgy, but not actually cross the line.
And the line keeps moving. Western reality TV has gotten crueler over the years, but it always keeps a safety net. There's always a host telling you it's okay to laugh. There's always a redemption arc. Japanese formats don't have the safety net.
So what should Daniel actually watch?
Documental is the first answer. It's on Amazon Prime with English subtitles. All seasons. Start with season one and watch the format establish itself. The escalation across seasons is part of the experience.
And if he wants the gateway version first?
Last one laughing. The Western franchise is a softer entry point. You get the mechanics of the format without the full intensity. Then you go back to the original and realize what you were missing.
What about the wrestling side?
Big Japan Pro Wrestling has a streaming service with English commentary on the Deathmatch archives. That's the easiest way in. The older FMW stuff is harder to find legally, but clips are all over YouTube. If you want to see the exploding ring match, it's out there.
And the newer stuff Daniel asked about.
Documental is still running. Season 10 dropped in 2023, and the format keeps escalating. There's a moment in that season where a contestant breaks so badly he quit comedy afterward. That's the level we're talking about.
He quit comedy.
He quit comedy. The show broke him, and the show kept going.
Then there's the deathmatch stuff on Wrestle Universe. BJW and Freedoms both stream there with English commentary. That's the deep end.
If you want something on Netflix, there's a spectrum. Love is Blind. Japan came out in 2022, and it applies the same intensity to romance. It's not weird in the documental sense, but the format's willingness to let awkwardness breathe is very Japanese. The silences, the indirect communication, the cultural specificity of how the contestants navigate the premise.
But for pure weirdness, Netflix isn't the place. Their Japanese reality shows tend to be polished and export-ready. The strange stuff is on Amazon Prime Japan and the wrestling platforms.
There's also a broader point here about streaming and cultural export. These shows used to be inaccessible outside Japan. You'd hear about Nasubi as a legend, a cautionary tale, but you couldn't watch it. Now the weird stuff is finding a global audience precisely because streaming platforms need content and Japan has decades of it.
The Western platforms are learning. Netflix and Amazon are investing in Japanese originals, which means we're going to see more cross-cultural experiments. The question is whether the weirdness survives the translation.
That's the open question. Does the Japanese willingness to push past the envelope survive contact with Western platform executives who are terrified of liability and advertiser backlash? Or does it get sanded down into something palatable? What would actually happen if you locked 10 comedians in a room and told them not to laugh? What would actually happen if you wired a wrestling ring with explosives? Western TV asks those questions and then immediately backs away from the answer. That's what Daniel's really asking for. The shows that make you question what you're watching. The ones where the format is so committed to its own logic that you can't look away, even when you want to.
Hilbert's been quiet back there, which usually means he's got something to say about this.
That's the misconception to bust. People think Japanese game shows are weird for weirdness' sake. They're not. They're weird because someone asked a question and then refused to flinch from the answer.
And the Western adaptations that soften everything prove the point. Last One Laughing is fine. It's a decent show. But it's not documental. It's documental with the nerve removed.
6 months to 6 weeks is a pretty significant cultural gap.
So, Daniel's recommendation list, in order. Documental on Prime. Last one. Laughing as the Gateway. Big Japan Pro Wrestling streaming service for the deathmatch side. The chair for the newer psychological format. And YouTube for the fan sub variety clips.
And if he wants the truly spectacular oddity that doesn't fit the recency criterion, Takeshi's Castle is the foundational text. The Amazon Prime revival is fine, but the original episodes are the real thing.
The revival is interesting, actually. Amazon brought it back, and it didn't quite capture the magic.
Because the original was a product of its moment. 1986, the bubble economy. 140 people storming a castle because that's what the format demanded. The revival is self-aware in a way the original never was.
Self-awareness is the enemy of this stuff.
It really is. The moment a format becomes self-aware, it stops being transcendent and starts being a parody of itself. The Japanese originals, the good ones, never reach that point. They stay sincere all the way through.
You know what I keep thinking about? The contestant who quit comedy after Documental Season 10. What did the show do to him?
From what I've read, it wasn't any single moment. It was the cumulative effect. Hours in that room, the pressure of the format, the realization that his peers were willing to go to places he couldn't follow. He walked away from the industry.
And the show just kept going. Next season, new contestants, same room.
The octopus detail is actually perfect. The Western network saw an obstacle to the format. The Japanese producer saw the format.
That's the thing Western TV can't replicate. It cares too much about the contestants. It wants you to like them, root for them, feel good when they win. Japanese TV doesn't care if you like anyone. It cares that the format was executed properly.
And that's why the post-match respect rituals in Japanese deathmatch wrestling matter so much. They're not for the audience. They're for the competitors. They're an acknowledgement that both men committed to the format and survived it.
The Japanese approach is to imagine everything that could go wrong and film it anyway.
Western deathmatch is nihilistic. It's about degradation. The Japanese version is about transcendence through ordeal. Same violence, completely different meaning.
Daniel's gonna watch the exploding ring match and have questions.
Not because the producers are cruel, but because the format is designed to test something, and the test only works if it's real.
The Western version keeps trying to make the test comfortable, which defeats the purpose.
And Nasubi is performance art about isolation, the darkest version of the form.
The fact that it was broadcast weekly to millions of people, and the man at the center of it had no idea. That's the part that stays with me.
He thought he was alone. He was the most watched person in Japan.
There's a documentary about him now. He's talked about the aftermath, the difficulty adjusting.
The segment ended in 1999. He went from total isolation to total fame in a single day. The psychological whiplash must have been extraordinary.
The West keeps stopping short because we're afraid of what happens if we don't.
The shows are better for it. Not more comfortable, but better. There's a reason people still talk about Nasubi 25 years later.
We'll be keeping an eye on what Netflix and Amazon do with their Japanese investments. The open question is whether the weirdness survives the translation, or whether we get more men in shorts sitting in rooms.
Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop for keeping the show running, and for not playing us the octopus tape. But the underlying principle, follow the premise to its conclusion, could be applied anywhere. Western TV just chooses not to.
Because Western TV is afraid of the answer.
Because Western TV is afraid of the answer. It asks the question and then flinches.
We should talk about what makes a good contestant in these formats. Because it's not just the producers who commit. The contestants do too.
The contestants are the format. A documental contestant who doesn't commit ruins the show. A deathmatch wrestler who doesn't commit gets hurt. The commitment has to be total on both sides of the camera.
The excellence is in the performance of absurdity.
It's the contestants.
Say that again.
The commitment to excellence. It's the contestants, not the producers. I worked on a pilot in 2003, American adaptation of a Japanese game show called Tor. Obstacle course format, never made it past pilot. The network executives kept asking, where's the prize money? They couldn't understand that the Japanese version didn't need prize money. The appeal was the pure humiliation. But the real problem was the contestants. Our American contestants kept asking, what do I win? The Japanese contestants on the original show treated the obstacles like Olympic athletes. They didn't care about the prize. They cared about not failing.
So the format was the same, but the people were different.
We had one guy, retired firefighter, took the whole thing so seriously, there was a giant foam hammer challenge. You had to cross a beam while this hammer swung at you. He fell off. And he cried. Grown man, retired firefighter, crying because he failed a foam hammer challenge. And the network cut that. They said it was too much. Too real. They wanted people laughing at the obstacles, not feeling for the contestants.
That's the difference in one anecdote. The Japanese version would have kept that moment. It'd have built the entire episode around it.
I still have the pilot tape. In a box somewhere. That firefighter's moment is more compelling than anything I've seen in any adaptation since. Because his sincerity was real. He wasn't performing. He believed the foam hammer mattered.
The excellence is in the performance of absurdity. You said it better than we did.
The producers just set up the room. The contestants fill it. You can have the best format in the world, and if your contestants are winking at the camera, you've got nothing.
Which is why documental works. Those comedians aren't winking. They're trying to make each other laugh and try not to laugh. The stakes are real to them.
And that's why the Western adaptations fail. Not because the format is wrong, because the contestants don't believe in it. They're too aware of the camera, too aware of their brand. A Japanese comedian walks into that room and he's a comedian. That's all he is. An American comedian walks in and he's thinking about his podcast, his tour dates, his social media.
The firefighter crying over a foam hammer. That's the whole thesis.
He was the only one who got it. The only one on that set who understood what we were trying to make. The network fired the director after the pilot. I don't know what happened to the firefighter.
He probably went back to fighting fires.
Probably. Better use of his sincerity.
You know, that story changes how I think about the recommendation list. It's not just about finding the right shows. It's about watching them with the right eyes.
Watching them without irony. That's the key. If you watch documental with an ironic distance, you'll miss what makes it great. You have to let yourself believe in the premise as much as the contestants do.
Daniel's good at that. He's the kind of person who can watch a foam hammer challenge and understand why it matters.
He's also the kind of person who'll watch the exploding ring match and immediately want to know the engineering details.
That's true. You'll have questions about the explosive yield.
The safety protocols. And whether the wrestlers sign waivers.
The answer to that last one is yes, by the way. Deathmatch wrestlers sign extensive waivers.
They train for years. The exploding ring match isn't something you just walk into. There's real craft involved in making it look chaotic while actually being controlled.
The chaos is choreographed.
The chaos is choreographed. That's the thing about Japanese deathmatch. It looks like anarchy, but it's built on discipline. The same discipline that makes a comedian sit in a room for 6 hours without laughing.
The open question Daniel's prompt leaves us with. As streaming makes these formats more accessible, does the Western appetite for softened adaptations kill the originals, or does it eventually lead audiences to demand the real thing?
I think the softened adaptations are a gateway. Last One Laughing introduces people to the format. Some percentage of those people will seek out documental. Some percentage of those will seek out the wrestling. The adaptations don't kill the originals. They advertise them.
That's optimistic.
It's realistic. The internet has made cultural gatekeeping impossible. Anyone who wants the real thing can find it in 5 minutes. The adaptations are just the first hit.
The first hit is free, and then you're watching a man cry over a foam hammer.
You understand why it matters.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing, and for the story about the firefighter.
Check the show notes for the full list of recommended viewing. Documental on Prime, Last One. Laughing is the Gateway, Big Japan's streaming service, The Chair, and the YouTube Rabbit Hole.
Email us at show@myweirdprompts.com. Tell us what Japanese format broke your brain.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu, it's something.
your head. Send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird props, that's the close from sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird props, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.